We'll hear from Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind from La Crosse in this half hour about his reelection bid and his positions on the most important issues facing the nation and Wisconsin, and we'll welcome your questions for him. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just about 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, October 24th. After 7:30, we will hear from Congressman Kind's Republican challenger, Ray Boland, and we'll welcome your questions for him. It's candidate forum time here on the Ideas Network. Our number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. By the way, tomorrow we will focus in on the 7th Congressional District, the candidates running in the 7th Congressional District, and on Friday we will hear from the candidates in the 8th Congressional District. Ben Marins is doing similar forums this afternoon in his 3 o'clock hour. Let me welcome our candidate for this half hour. He is Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from La Crosse. He is seeking re-election in Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Glad to be with you.
Well, why should you be re-elected, Congressman Kind?
Well, we've got a lot of work to do, Joy, and it's unfinished. Obviously, we're coming through a very tough economic time, the worst economic recession since the Great Depression, and really priority 1, 2, and 3 for our nation needs to be focused on the economy. What do we need to do to come together, focus on the challenges to get this economy back on track, creating good-paying jobs? Because a growing economy solves a lot of problems, and I want to be in the mix on that. It's been a great honor to represent my home area here in western Wisconsin in Congress, especially not now. The challenges are great. We have a fiscal house that has to be put back in order. Some tough decisions have to be made there to bring these deficits down in a sustainable fashion. But I also believe we need to, at the same time, be planting the seed corn so we can reap a bountiful harvest for our nation and lay the groundwork for long-term economic growth. And for me, it means maintaining an important investment in quality education, job training, basic and applied research, infrastructure development, the investment in alternative and renewable energy, the expansion of broadband. These are the building blocks we need to be investing in as a country in order to have the type of growth well out in the future and keep us the most innovative, competitive, and creative nation in the world. What's at stake?
How do we invest in those things and keep the deficits down?
Well, you've got to be smart. You've got to go after some big spending programs with the eye towards reform and cost savings. And, of course, the largest and fastest growing area of spending is healthcare costs. So you got to come back to why healthcare costs are going up and what steps can be taken to bring it down. And I think there are models of care out there right here in Wisconsin that have shown us ways to do that, that are highly integrated, coordinated, patient-focused, that are producing some of the best results in the world at a better cost. And therefore, we've got to continue down the road of delivery system reform, but also, and this is most important in healthcare reform, is payment reform. So we're paying for the value and the quality of care given and not the volume of care. In fact, there's a recent Institute of Medicine report that came out, I don't know if you saw it, but shows that we're spending over $750 billion a year in this country on tests, on procedures, on things that don't work. And they're not adding value in healthcare. That's where we need to be focused if we're going to be serious with the American people about bringing the deficits down. And then the second largest spending program, too, is defense. And so we've got to be reforming our defense capabilities with the eye towards cost savings, but in a way that doesn't jeopardize force readiness, that doesn't jeopardize our nation's security. And I think we can do that, too. We've got 80,000 troops, for instance, stationed in Western Europe, guarding against a Russian invasion that's not going to happen in our lifetime. And weapons programs in the pipeline today are $300 billion over budget because of change orders and contract modifications. So this blank check that defense contractors expect from the American taxpayer, it has to end. We can't afford that anymore. So if anyone is out there running for office today claiming they can deliver $5 trillion of additional tax breaks and adding another $2 trillion of spending for the defense budget is misleading the American people. The math doesn't add up, and it will only dig this hole deeper when it comes to solving our budget challenge.
Do we end the Bush-era tax cuts to those families making more than $250,000 a year in order to improve our economy?
Yeah, Joy, I serve on the Ways and Means Committee. We have jurisdiction over the tax code, and it is a monstrosity, the tax code. We desperately need tax reform. We have to simplify the tax code in order to make it more efficient, in order to make it more conducive for companies to stay here in the United States. But I also think it's fundamentally unfair that we have multimillionaires, multi-billionaires living in this great country of ours paying a lower effective tax rate than most working families are. And we're never going to be able to solve the budget challenge we face as long as that condition continues. So as we're reforming the tax code and trying to simplify it, we also need to make it fair. And those most wealthy, and I've spoken to many of them, they understand they have to pay more, and they're going to have to in the future. But here's the deal. They say, Ron, I'm willing to do that, but I don't want good money to be chasing after bad. It's got to go in hand with spending reforms so that we're bringing down unnecessary spending in the federal budget. I think that's a fair agreement. I think that's a fair quid pro quo, you know, with the most wealthy. And I think they understand that they're going to have to be contributing more. But, boy, if you listen to the Romney Ryan campaign, that's not what they're calling for. They're calling for an additional tax breaks at the very top and hope this trickle-down economics is somehow going to strengthen the middle class. It didn't work in the past, and it's not going to work in the future.
You know, the Romney Ryan campaign is also calling for Medicare reform. Changes it to our Medicare system, they say, to preserve it, to keep it viable. What would you do, Representative Kind, when it comes to Medicare and its future?
Well, I wouldn't do what they're proposing, and that is delaying any type of reform for an additional 10 years. We don't have that time. We've got to start reforming the healthcare system now, not 10 years later. Nor would I privatize Medicare or Social Security, for that matter, as they're calling for, creating these private vouchers, expecting seniors to go out in the private marketplace and try to shop amongst competing plans with an insufficient voucher that won't cover the cost of seniors' health care. And, you know, I know Paul, this is his idea. He's a young guy. He wasn't around in 1965 when Medicare was first created. But let's recall, the reason why Medicare had to be created to begin with is because private insurance companies do not want to have to insure seniors. Seniors aren't profitable. As we get older, we consume more health care, and that's why Medicare had to be created. Now, they're trying to roll back the clock to pre-1965 and throw in the seniors at the mercy of private insurance companies, and I don't think it'll work. Nor is it fiscally responsible, because they're not doing anything that would reform the health care delivery system or the payment system with it. And that, I think, is the key. And the reason I believe that is because we've got models of care right in my own backyard here, from Mayo to Gunderson to Marshfield to Dean and Aurora, ThetaCare, that are showing us highly efficient healthcare delivery systems that can lead to great cost savings. If we can take that lesson and apply it nationwide, we would not have the healthcare crisis that we're facing today as a nation. So I think there's a better way of reforming Medicare, and that's through reforming the entire healthcare system, which is exactly what we need to do because we're all in this. I mean, rising health care costs is not only affecting Medicare, the Medicaid program, BadgerCare back home, but it's affecting businesses large and small, making them less competitive. It's having an impact on family budgets with rising costs. So if we're going to do this, we have to reform the entire health care system, not just the Medicare program. And I think that's where Romney Ryan falls considerably short in their vision of what they're offering the American people.
We are talking with Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from La Crosse, who is seeking re-election in Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. And we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. It's going to be a cloudy day today with some areas of fog, a chance of rain statewide. Highs will be in the 60s and low 70s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 7:30, we will hear from Congressman Ron Kind's Republican challenger, Ray Boland, and welcome your questions for him after 7:30. Now to the phones and your questions for Congressman Ron Kind. And our first caller is Jennifer in Black River Falls. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
Yes, what's your question?
My question is, as a college student who's about to graduate, what can be done to make sure that the economy allows for me to be able to find a job?
Yeah, she wants a job, Congressman Kind.
Well, I'm glad, and I congratulate her for going to school. I think it's essential for students to have that ability, the access to higher education especially, and that's in jeopardy right now under the Romney-Ryan budget. They're calling for deep draconian cuts in financial aid programs in support of education. And that, instead of planting the seed corn, is eating the seed corn, and would jeopardize future generations and their ability to develop the skills and the lifelong training habits they need to be competitive. Because I think that the greatest challenge we face economically as a nation is increased global competition. Other countries are making this investment in their education infrastructure system. And how we respond to that is going to define who we are as a nation and how competitive we are as we move forward. But I think we need to go beyond that, Joy. I think we need an innovation agenda for our country, one that does have a sustained focus on education and job training, broadband expansion, the infrastructure development, the new fields that are being developed now in high-tech, biotech, life sciences. And we also need, I think, as a nation, to have the ability to make things and to create things, invent and grow things. And that's why I've been talking about having a national manufacturing agenda. I introduced legislation recently that would reduce the marginal tax rate for manufacturing companies who do decide to stay here in Wisconsin or in the United States rather than shipping those jobs overseas. And I call for reducing that rate from 35% down to 20%. And I pay for it through reduction of expenditures, especially offshore tax loopholes, and the tax incentives that exist today that reward companies who ship jobs overseas. I mean, this is the craziness of the tax code right now, and it's been built up through a number of years through powerful special interests. And right now, we're offering tax breaks to companies moving jobs overseas. That's got to end. But as we've tried to do that, all the Republicans have been saying no, because they view that as constituting new revenue or a new tax, and they do not support it because they're all signing this Grover Norquist pledge. And so the policy has become warped because of this ideological rigidity, and it's not helping to create jobs at home here for people like Jennifer.
So why hasn't the economy and the job situation improved more, Representative Kind? We hear Mitt Romney calling out President Obama for promising an unemployment rate in the 5%, and it's still close to 8%.
Well, let's recall, and I know we tend to have short-term memory in this country from time to time, but 4 years ago when President Obama was sworn in, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month. $17 trillion of wealth had already been destroyed in the stock market. He inherited a $1.5 trillion budget deficit. And since then, we've had 31 consecutive months of private sector job growth. All that wealth that was destroyed in the stock market has since been returned. The deficit now is one-third less than when President Obama first took office. So there has been progress. It just hasn't come back as quickly as anyone would like to see or where anyone should be satisfied. And that's because we've gone through a very tough financial crisis, and a lot of deleveraging took place in both the private and the public sector, but especially amongst private finances. And in some ways, it was long overdue. I mean, our country was becoming way too indebted, and that correction needed to happen. But whenever you have a financial crisis like that, it shakes the confidence, and it takes a while for it to come back. And that's exactly what we're seeing. But also the housing market. Construction is what led us into the recession, and it's really not pulling us out because, again, people's finances aren't there yet. And typically in past recessions, a recovery stage is usually led by housing and construction. We're not getting that because of the uniqueness of this. But nevertheless, there are things that we can be doing, Joy, to help get this economy moving again. And just legislatively at the federal level, doing the basic meat and potato things that we're supposed to be doing, like passing a transportation bill or even passing a farm bill, in which the House leadership is refusing to bring before the floor for consideration. Agriculture, production agriculture, is still the number one industry in the state of Wisconsin. It employs more people directly or indirectly. Our farmers need a five-year farm bill so they know what to expect over the next 5 years so we can continue to build the agricultural industry, the impact it has on rural communities and urban communities alike. But it's not getting done because there's not enough listening, there's not enough compromise and give and take in order to find common ground. And that's what's really lacking today in public service. And it's unfortunate because our country, our economy suffers as a consequence.
I know that your opponent will likely say that job creation is suffering because of uncertainty, because of the threat of tax increases for the wealthy, the costs of the Affordable Care Act implementing, too much regulation. What's your response to that?
Well, I agree in part. There is uncertainty, but that uncertainty is being driven by the lack of political compromise. There's no reason why we can't act like grown-ups and reasonable people and sit down and talk and listen to each other. Because I found that when I've done that in the past, and I've done it a lot, so I've tried to work in a bipartisan fashion. I've tried to be independent-minded as I approach the issues. I try to put the interests of the people I represent first, ahead of the powerful special interests of the political leadership. But when you do that, there's a lot of common ground that's out there. I'm convinced of it, both in the state and in Washington. But you'd never guess that by looking at the political scene today. There's just too much acrimony. It's too polarized. The hyper-partisanship is paralyzing us as a nation. And therefore, I think we need to be on the search for those who are willing to sit down and do that hard work and find common ground rather than candidates running around out there signing pledges and giving their voting card away. That's, in essence, what's happened. I mean, once you sign a Grover Norquist pledge, you're telling the world and your constituents, I'm done thinking about these issues. I'm giving my voting card to Grover Norquist, and I don't have to face these issues anymore. I think that's the wrong way to represent the people. We need to get back to a willingness to compromise so it's not a four-letter word anymore.
Next, we go to Pat in Richland County. Hello, Pat.
Yeah, good morning, Representative.
Good morning.
Say, back to the war in Iraq, I'm sure your favorite subject, you know, that war of choice of Bush that was really unethical.
Right.
You had several listening sessions prior to that invasion, and overwhelmingly your constituents said no, no, no. And so I guess when you're talking about voting in the interest of your constituents, obviously your allegiance was with something else because you went ahead and voted for it anyway. If you can't tell us why you made that vote, whose allegiance you were with, would you please give us an example besides Saddam Hussein being gone, why that was worth it?
Yeah, Pat, you know, it's 10 years ago, but I'd be happy to come back and address that again. You know, I supported it because I believed at the time it was important for us to get weapons inspection teams back in Iraq so they could have a chance to search for weapons of mass destruction. Guess what? When they were in there and they found nothing, I'm the one who led a letter in the effort to President Bush saying, don't rush into this. Give the inspection teams time to do their job because they're not finding it. And I told them it would be foolhardy to pull them out and send our troops in, but I guess my great regret now, in retrospect, is that the president really didn't intend to give the inspection teams time to do their job. He was hell-bent on sending the troops in, and he ordered them out, ordered the inspection teams out, sent our troops in, and the rest is history. And we can keep going over this and rehashing it, but you know, President Obama, when he ran for office, promised to get our combat troops out of Iraq, and they're gone now. They're out, and I applaud him for doing that. Last week, I was in Afghanistan, visiting with our troops on the ground, trying to see if we can accelerate the timetable of withdrawing them and getting them back home, and whether the Afghan army and police are capable of getting to the front and assuming the security duties themselves. I think they are, and I would hope, and my advice to the president is we need to pick up this timetable now. I don't know what more our troops can do than what they've already accomplished. It's going to be up to the Afghan people to determine their future and their children's future. We can't do it for them, and we can't afford another $2 billion a week being pumped into Afghanistan when we have nation building to do here at home. I was glad I was able to hook up with the 1157th National Guard Transportation Company from Wisconsin. They're 7.5 months in. They're doing a lot of the convoys and therefore at the forefront of the IEDs, and that's what's untenable about this situation. The 229 National Guard from Wisconsin just got dropped in for a one-year rotation, and for some of those soldiers, it's the third and fourth time between Iraq and Afghanistan. It's time to bring them home, and it's time for us to focus on the nation building we need to do right here. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you, Pat, for the call. A caller just dropped off, wanted to know why the administration focused on changing health care rather than the economy in the first 2 years.
Well, I think healthcare is fundamental to a growing and competitive economy. I mean, if you don't address these rising costs, we're going to be less competitive as a nation, which means less job creation, less businesses being created here who can be competitive globally. So I think, you know, and it's also, if you're interested in budget discipline, again, it's the largest and fastest growing area of spending. So to ignore that means to ignore these deficits that will explode out in the future because of the aging population and the fact that no one is taking on health care reform. So you only have so many windows of opportunity to address big issues like this in our country. And I would submit that if we can continue to move forward on health care reform with the delivery system and the payment reform, the build-out of health information technology and the EMR records, which is crucial to all this working, so we can finally start collecting the data so we do know what works and what doesn't work in the delivery of health care, that too is going to be one of the building blocks that we need to be laying in order to have sustained economic job growth. So I think there's always going to be an excuse not to do something big, not to take on a system as large and as complicated as healthcare, for instance. But we got to start somewhere. And I think it was hand in hand with job creation and getting this economy straightened out and as competitive as it needs to be.
Well, we have just a minute or so to go before we're done here. Is there another issue that you think is an important one facing the nation that we haven't been able to talk about?
Well, John, the general issue, and obviously the American people are going to have to be the ultimate referee in these elections, is that somewhere along the line, political discourse has broken down. And the American people aren't getting what they deserve, which is an honest discussion of the issues. And listen, we can debate these, and there will be differences of opinion, but we've got to learn how to disagree without being so disagreeable. And I'm finding that disagreement running very high these days at all levels, from Washington to Madison, back home in our local government, and even within families. And I don't know what is driving this to the cause, but it's a great concern to me because I've always approached my job as trying to function within a family. A family of a great nation is diverse of people and ideas like we have here. I certainly know that if I walked home at the end of the day through the door and I told my wife, Tawny, hey, Tawny, I've decided it's going to be my way or no way at all with all the decisions in this family. You can imagine what the reaction is. Yet that's kind of the attitude that most elected officials are bringing to their job right now, this ideological rigidity, which is leading to lack of progress.
And I got to leave it there. Thank you so much. We will continue after the news.